Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Bez Hashem, BPW, share number 126. By speaking for women, share number 126. We talked about how criticism is really a short circuit way of asking for what you want, and it's best to avoid the criticism and just in a gentle, mature way express what you want. And that criticism represents the fight response in the relationship. The pursuer in the relationship usually is the one who criticizes, and they fight, and they have to learn not to do that, hold back, and express your desires and your wants in a vulnerable, courageous way. Now, when it comes to the opposite end, the distancer, they withdraw. They withdraw. That's the flight response. That's another way of dealing, of fearing, of asking what you want and letting others know that, you know, how you feel. So both the pursuer and the distancer are copping out. The pursuer is copping out by being harsh and being overcritical instead of being vulnerable and soft and expressing their need, which is really the underlying thing behind their criticism. The distancer is an expert at withdrawing from the relationship. They're both escaping. And the distancer, it looks nicer because they're not criticizing, they're not yelling, they're not screaming, but it's just as destructive. They withdraw into work, or they withdraw into television, they withdraw into hobbies, they withdraw into computers, they withdraw into activities, they withdraw into reading, they withdraw into staying busy at all times instead of connecting with their husbands or wives. They withdraw into, by husbands, learning, also poison. I'm sorry. Women withdraw into chesed projects and into running to a shir every night instead of being there with their husband. That's also withdrawing, by the way. Doing chesed for everybody, baking challah projects and this and that, calling people, amonis, yisayim, these are all beautiful things. But if it's an expense of your own husband and your own children, that's withdrawing. That is a withdrawal. You know, so one needs to be aware of that. Withdrawing comes in very weird, so-called l'shem shemayim, different ways of doing this. With the outside world, you're the greatest tzaddikus in the world. In the meantime, you're just withdrawing from being a healthy person. And there's nothing wrong with doing challah baking and doing chesed, doing these wonderful things, but not at the expense of the damage caused by the withdrawing from your own husband and your own children. So one classic distancer once said it this way: I love when my grown children come to visit. I like sitting in the next room listening to them talk. Now, distancers really want and need connection as much as pursuers do. That's an important thing to remember, because on the surface, it doesn't look like it's that way. They're not saying much, but very often in their own quiet way, they take comfort in the connection, in the family connection that is there. And very often distancers like the feeling of being pursued because they want the connection. They don't want withdrawal. If you leave a distancer alone too long, they will come closer. They will come closer. That's why a pursuer needs to sometimes back off, and the distancer will come closer to them. While if the pursuer nags and bullies and criticizes, they will withdraw even further. Now, distancers will withdraw even further. Sometimes they pout, sometimes they storm around, moody, if they believe their needs are not going to be met. Problem is the other one, the spouse, is left in the dark. You know, why are they so withdrawn? And they don't even know how to help. Sometimes the distancer in the withdrawal assumes that if you love me, you'd know what I want. That is a big mistake that distancers do. Rarely, rarely true. Love doesn't make us mind readers. So a distancer that distances and assumes that my spouse, my husband, if he truly loved me, he would know what I want, so I'm going to withdraw, is being immature and inaccurate. They're not mind readers. Distancers are hypersensitive to criticism. They don't like being told what to do or to be seen inadequate. At the first hint of disapproval, they will either disappear or get angry. If you recognize yourself as a distancer, the recovery includes ways to speak up in healthy ways, to express yourself, either directly verbally or at the very least in a note and an email at the start, or but better at face-to-face. So you have to be careful about that. The other idea, what people like doing, unfortunately, is gathering information from a defensive mode. So she brings Pat Love a scenario here of a very sad scenario. An accountant working 60 hours a week, coming home exhausted, comes into the door. His pet peeve is he's looking forward to a quiet night with his wife, only to find his three kids doing everything but what they're supposed to be doing. One night he pulls into the driveway. He almost runs over one of the kids' bicycles, trips on another kid's backpack, and he's yelling when he comes in. As he's doing this, he's yelling, and they all say, you know, oh, hi, Dad, how are you? But no other acknowledgement. And he's fuming. Then I tell you to pick up your backpack, get over here right now. And he storms into his office in his house and he slams the door. And it becomes a very unhealthy scenario. Their criticism and defensiveness between this accountant and his wife affected the entire family. So this concept, by the way, when you feel anger, to get it all out is not always true. Sometimes you have to learn how to wait and navigate and figure it out. Because defensiveness can be a response to an attack, but it could come from hopelessness too. So you don't gather information from defensiveness. You have to get out of the defensiveness and be mature about trying to get information about what's bothering your husband or your wife. Some people gather information from contempt. Contempt is the worst. It's the ultimate form of disrespect. It has nothing to do with true love. Contempt should never be there in a home. Contempt falls into different categories. It could be name-calling, sarcasm, ignoring, making a whole crime list of all the bad things your husband is guilty of. Sometimes it's criticizing your husband in front of their friends, your friends, and you don't see a connection between this behavior and his withholding of affection, which you resent because he's withholding his affection. In the meantime, you just cursed him out in front of your friends or in front of your children, and you're not putting the two and two together. So this is the idea. This is a person, Claire and Charles. That's this couple. Claire had a particularly harmful habit of ridiculing Charles in front of their friends, and she couldn't see no connection between this behavior and his withholding of affection. It took several sessions of therapy for Charles to express how humiliated it was for him to be criticized in front of others. So he needed to express that. Claire, on the other hand, was angry at Charles because he had shown no affection and support towards her. So it took her quite a while to understand that she too was withholding and being contemptuous of him. So they both knew they had issues within themselves. They both exhibited what we would call not good midos. And they had their own individual style of punishing each other. Acts of disdain, acts of unkindness, negative attitudes, and they started to realize their pattern and to reverse it and replace it with respect. There will always be times in normal human being interactions and in a marriage where he or she, husband or wife, will fall short of your expectation of them. The problem is when that happens, you end up with a frozen image of your husband. This is the way he is, period. He will never change. You got off to a bad start. Certain negative things were done. You labeled him a certain fixed thing. He's put into a box already. He's done. This is the way he is. Can't change. And then all your behaviors is towards that non-changeable person, which is usually negative, which makes him in a worse state or be more stubborn about the way they are in their own box and not willing to go out of it. And again, it's when each one taps into each other's inner potential behind those negative behaviors that they're able to access it and create change. But that takes courage, and that takes maturity, and that takes wisdom. Here, Pat Love said a fascinating, fascinating story. It's someone, Ted and Trisha. Okay, that's the name she gives here. Ted asked for an appointment with him and his wife, Trisha. Pat Love's schedule was tight, didn't fit in. But what Ted did is he canceled a business trip to Europe to accommodate getting it together sooner. So basically, he canceled a trip to Europe on business in order so that him and his wife, Trisha, should be together and meet Pat Love, the author, regarding their marriage. The day of the appointment, Trisha comes to the office first. Ted, the husband, arrives a couple of minutes later. He's carrying a fresh cappuccino that he picked up for her. And Pat Love, the author, he tells the couple now. She tells the couple, how can I be of help? And without looking at Ted, Trisha answers, well, our biggest problem is that Ted doesn't care about our relationship. Pat Love, the author, looks at Ted, expects a response. But Ted is just looking down at the floor. So Pat Love says like this, let me see if I got this. Ted, were you the one who tracked me down through the publisher to get an appointment? Yes, Ted answers. Pat Love then asks, and you scheduled an appointment? Yes. And Ted, you canceled your trip to Europe? Yes. And you made bed and breakfast accommodations? Yes. Then Pat Love turns to Trisha, who was drinking that cappuccino that Ted just gave her. And Pat Love says, I'm confused. You're saying this is the guy who doesn't care about your relationship? He just organized the appointment, canceled a trip, a business trip to Europe, an important one, and in order to be here. What happened was, is that each one had a frozen image of one to the other. They formed a certain picture in their head, and they couldn't get out of it. And part of it is, it was discovered later, Trisha, the wife, her father was a very cold, distant person, barely interacted with the family. He never clearly said he loved his children. He died not saying he loved his children. Ted's mother and father were divorced when he was 11 years old. He was left with a depressed father who never accepted him. And so both of them, those experiences that they both had, formed the conclusion for both of them, frightening images of their own relationship. She saw men as uncaring. And because her father was uncaring, ultimately Ted, her husband, was uncaring, period. He, Ted, saw women as unaccepting. And therefore, his wife, Trisha, is unaccepting. Basically, each one projected a frozen image of each other. They both brought negative expectations into their marriage. And what happened was, they worked through it, and they recognized their patterns, and they began to reverse it. And they let go of those frozen images they had carried from childhood, and they began to see each other in a new light, where Ted could see his wife, what she really wanted, and all she really wanted was time with him. And the wife, Trisha, could see that Ted really did care about her and did care about their marriage. And it was an eye-opener to her. So again, tips for tough times. Instead of criticizing, ask what you want. And when your husband criticizes, ask what you need. How can I help? Stop being defensive. Call a timeout. Apologize. Take a deep breath. Ask for more information. When do you withdraw? You want more space? Can we talk about it later? Be patient and kind. Be kind and clear when expressing needs, being sensitive, being less critical, being less defensive, developing strong respect for one another. Develop the ongoing desire to please your husband. Current research on happy, stable couples indicate one recurring theme. Loving behaviors are what keeps people together. Loving behaviors are what keeps people together. Loving behaviors are what keeps people together. They may not solve all their problems. They may not stop arguing fully, but satisfied couples meet each other's needs in a positive way. You start gathering information. You start boxing away, pushing away, breaking away that frozen image of each other. You break it. Recognize that it's not true. People change and they're better than you think they are. You don't put them in the box. That's very, very important. It's very interesting. One woman once caught her interest, the author, by making a comment like this. Happily married for a long time. But the way she put it is, I divorced and remarried my husband 4 times in the last 22 years. Now, we never changed partners. We were always married to each other. But we had 4 different marriages to each other. What does that mean? Doesn't mean, God forbid, divorce or anything like that. Doesn't mean remarrying. What it means is that when the marriage hit a standstill point, both of them recognized, hey, right now it's not working anymore this way. So this is what we need now, and we're willing to change. So they didn't literally divorce. What they did was they divorced the aspects of the relationship that were not working and then remarried by changing and meeting each other's needs at all times. So people don't understand the ups and downs in marriage. Every marriage has that, and we don't understand it, and we panic. But we need not to panic. We need to be flexible enough to change. Many times people say, you weren't that way when I married you. Okay, so you weren't. But you could be better. You could adjust and be better. It doesn't have to be always you adjust and you're worse. Or put them in a box. You're a goner. You know, you label them and then you're done. So that's a very, very important insight. Bracha v'atzlacha.